Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hey, everyone. Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. I happen to be, once again, purely by chance, I got on the computer and Adrian Boisel was here, and he's kind enough to do a podcast with me today. Thank you, Adrian.
Hey, I'm humbled. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's incredible. I just, you know, people that I've never met in my life, first time, and I get to have great conversations with them about things that they're passionate about, like we'll be discussing, I'm sure. So people don't, I always say at the start, so people have a little bit of a picture about who you are and what you get up to. Can you give everyone a snapshot about who you are and what you're currently doing, and then we can sort of explore your background, origins, all that cool stuff?
Yeah, I'd love to. So as he said, I'm Adrian Boisel. I am a social impact entrepreneur based in Northern California. It's a beautiful area if you'd like adventure, off-roads, outdoors, dirt bikes, and just enjoying the outdoors. This is probably one of the best places in the country to be. And so I've been born and raised here my whole life. I grew up in a very broken home, and I have, through adversity and just willpower and my faith, have been able to overcome a lot of the obstacles that have been thrown my way. And now I run a marketing agency and a marketing consultancy, if you will, that specializes in content creation. So we have a video marketing division, and then we have our Brand Butler side. And the Brand Butler side, we've been working on for just over a year now, a software that is an AI software that I believe is going to be the future of marketing.
The future of marketing. That's it. It's such a topical thing right now, isn't it? Like there's people, like I'm in your industry too. It's like, so we're an agency and we do brands and all that sort of stuff. And people are talking about it all the time. And what I find really interesting about that is, I guess, the mix between people who, you know, it's like using a tool or tools for its right purpose in the right way. And The people, I mean, it's probably no different, I guess, AI or no AI, with the person at the other end who's right. on the receiving end. It's like, so, okay, we're going to be using AI. And for most people, it's like, I guess, like a plumber saying, I'm going to use XYZ, you know, special new tools to do the job. At the end of the day, I just want my pipe fixed. I mean, it's sort of not exactly super accurate, but similar idea. It's like, I just want it fixed or done. Yeah. What does it mean? How do you then, yeah, and sort of maybe you can speak to this too for reasons why, outside of the fact that AI is cool and interesting and sort of new, what real potential value do these sort of things in your mind actually bring to the person? Because it's about them ultimately, right?
Correct. Yeah, so I like to use an analogy of building a fence. I feel like it's very relatable. People understand this. 100 years ago, you had to hammer in nails and you're putting up the fence and digging the holes and doing everything manually. And nowadays with AI, it's the same thing. You can either build a fence with the hammer and nails and take 3 days to build that and spend all this time. And if you do it for a trade, spend all this time in somebody else's backyard, taking up their space and crowding up their home. Or you can get a nail gun and you can actually build that fence in half a day or a day and really collapse time. And that's the most valuable thing that we have that most people are not aware of, that I like to bring a lot of awareness to, is that the key to success, especially in business, is to collapse time anywhere and everywhere you possibly can. And that is the ultimate thing with AI, is it collapses time. The amount of efficiency, the amount of content I'm able to produce in 1 week is equivalent to about 90 days now. And that's not an exaggeration. That is a realistic. I could produce in 1 week what used to take me 90 days of content to create. And then you multiply that across multiple people on the team, right? I have 16 people on my team. You multiply each one of those people using AI, Now you do the math, the exponential growth on that. But the fundamentals do not change. The way that you build a fence is still the same. I'm not building a fence any differently. The fence boards go in the same place. The nails go in the same place. You still have to have your footings. You still have to have all the things that you have to have to build a fence correctly. But the speed and the tool that you're using to get there is much more efficient, right? And so that's the way that we should be looking at AI, is how long do you want to take to build that fence? It's like, oh, I'm a purist and I don't use AI and it took me 3 days to build this fence and look how great it is. Cool, I could build just as good of a fence, if not better, in one third of the time. Who are you going to hire? Are they going to want to hire the person that's going to be in their yard for a day, or are they going to want to hire the person that's going to be there for 3 days? And not only that, I can afford to be more cost effective because I have better tools that allow me to operate for cheaper, and I can be, instead of having to be there for three days and charge $1,000 a day and a $3,000 fence, now I can charge $1,000 for that fence. So I'm going to win out every single time with AI. And so the people that are going to really dominate the industry and really become better at it are the ones that have a good understanding of how to build the fence and then use the AI tools to make that process more efficient and smoother.
Mm. And so have you already come across, come across, you know, people, like you're talking about people who are Puritans or who have with any new tech, like people, you know, going, well, that's the common thing that I've heard. And to some extent, I think it's true depending on the use of the tools, right? Like the use of the tools is kind of, for me, a key point. It's like, it's the use of them. And the example is, impression that people might have is that, okay, so that's going to mean, the assumption being that's going to mean that the human contact and the reason and some of the reasons why I came to, you know, you as a marketing and or brand agency to do this, to talk about my brand and to work with me, that that's not going to be there because it's all about AI and because I don't have any human contact. How do you, or what's the angle, I guess, that you know, talk to people or the context that you might put AI in order to combat that particular opinion?
I think that the way that we currently learn and the way that we absorb information is inefficient, and AI allows us to increase the speed of that learning and to, again, collapse time. I always like to express, especially to clients who are hesitant, there are definitely dangers. If you have very poor planning, a very bad brand, very bad content that you're stealing from other people or you're ripping off, whether it's designs and art and images off of Midjourney and whatever you're doing, if you're putting in bad, what AI is going to do is it's going to enhance that bad. It's just going to make the bad worse, right? Mm-hmm. And then create potential liabilities for you if you're stealing somebody else's work and not attributing that. I'm at the base of who I am as a businessman. I started as a designer, right? I'm a creative. And so I don't believe in just taking somebody's work and not attributing where that work came from. But with a lot of graphic designers nowadays, they're leveraging AI and they're not giving credit back to the original source of where that AI is being created. A lot of Midjourney's data sets that they used to create the amazing stuff that they do is based off of ArtStation and all the amazing artists that have spent years and years, dozens if not hundreds of years combined between all of them to create amazing artwork. And then you have AI coming in, just ripping off all that, using that as a data set to create other images and iterations of that work. And so there's some legalities and things coming down the pipeline that we haven't even seen yet. But I think there's an ethical aspect to AI. And I think that's going to be an entire industry in itself. I think there's going to be a whole space for ethical AI use versus unethical AI use and AI safety. And so we're just seeing just a tiny sliver of what AI is going to become. The industry, yeah, just like when the car came in, the horse and buggy people were pissed that the car came in. But guess what? Look how big the automotive industry is now. And the automotive industry can't even compare. It's not even 1% of what we're going to see happen with AI. From AI shared autonomous vehicles, from AI robots, from AI marketing, AI advertising, AI CRMs, AI data processing. I mean, every facet of everything that we do on a day-to-day basis will have AI incorporated into some way. Lowering and raising our temperatures in our house when we're home, going to be in every facet. Our banking system, AI will be part of everything. It's going to make our life so much more efficient, and it's going to reduce the learning curve of it. So you can look at it as the enemy. And if you do, AI will become your master and you will be ruled by AI. Or you can learn to master AI and master the tools, master the techniques, master the strategies of it, and you become the master of AI. And now you use it for your own leverage and to give you more leverage in business or in your personal life. So I think it's just the mindset that you go into it, right? A lot of it is what we have between our ears. Mindset is 80% of the battle. And I think a lot of people that are anti-AI just have a lot of limiting beliefs, scarcity and fear that's wrapped around that. And that's something they need to face that goes beyond, you know, there's more layers to it. It goes beyond just AI, right? And so I know a lot of graphic designers that still feel negatively about stock websites and using Adobe Stock and things like that. So you're always going to find those people, but those people are the ones that are financially struggling, hurting, and the ones that are mad. And the only person they have to be mad at is themselves.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's an interesting subject. I mean, I found in my own use, because there's a whole lot of tools built in now to Adobe. I predominantly, you know, use, like, I don't actually use Photoshop. Interestingly, a great deal, I use a lot of like Illustrator and other different tools. But like The thing that I've found, which I didn't expect, is that I would find really good uses for things that I never really used to do that much anyway, that are great results. And a great example is which is a very, very simple thing, but, you know, as you'd probably understand, like for sites when you've got big long banners and you've got an image that you want to, you know, extend, you might do something like, you have people listening who are designers, like they'll sort of understand this. You might, you know, have some sort of gradient. You've got like a long thin banner and you've got an image that its proportions aren't the same as this long thin shape, but you need to use it. And so like extending that, so I now use that all the time, and it's just like crazy good, like ridiculously good. But it's interesting because like the difference for me with that particular example is that it's not something that I used to do that now I'm better at. I never used to do it in the first place. Because it would have been so ridiculous. Well, I did it, but I did something like add a gradient and fade it into the photo that was like a certain size. And that was fine. You know, that used to do its job. But, you know, that's an example of going, like in my mind, of going, okay, it's a particular thing that it can do infinitely better than I can. Yeah. And I also didn't used to do it anyway. So
that's right.
And so like certain things like that are great. And then, you know, different creative possibilities still, I guess, you know, if you want to say reined in by, you know, good design principles by a person, because AI doesn't really do that. You know, a person, I mean, it's an enhancement is how I see it. But it's not but it can go kind of like, the great example of like, what you were saying before, like input in, input out, is if you put in, or I should say, I'll hesitate to use the word good or bad input. I'll use the wrong or non-specific input. You know, it's like, but I actually see it as very much like people, is if I am saying to you, hey, Adrian, and I want something really specific from you, or I'm asking you a question, and the question ends up being very broad, your response is going to be what, like you filling in the blanks, right? Is you're going to That's be right. filling in the blanks going, maybe Saul is talking about this so I don't sound like I have a big long pause in the podcast. I'm going to like just fill in the blanks and I'm going to answer them. But if I'm really specific, and that's what, you know, then I've found AI does, and it's highlighted even more because it's not a person and you're going, I'm assuming that I should be able to say some loose comment and it knows what I'm talking about, which of course it doesn't. It doesn't know that. How could it know?
It doesn't have context.
It's not. Context, it's not the AI overmind. you know, it doesn't like understand, it doesn't like, you know my inner thoughts. It just has this input, and then I've gone and it just spits out some crazy stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's awful.
Language and image processing, right? Those are the two big things, large language models and then the image processing models that have been developed to recognize certain shapes and features. And, you know, they've been doing this for 20, 30 years at least. AI is not a new thing. Now it's reached that critical mass in 2022 and 2021. It reached critical mass and finally reached the mass market for it. But there are people that have, like George Gilder, who wrote books about AI and what was coming with it a decade ago, you know, and people that have been in the space for 20, 25, 30 years. I mean, I was reading a book by George Gilder, and then there's one by Ray Kurzweil called Singularity is Nearer. He wrote a book called Singularity is Nearer, and then he wrote one, Singularity is Nearer. And I mean, these guys have been studying AI since the 60s, the late 60s. So this is not new stuff. This just the mass population is now new to it, because ChatGPT, when it launched in 2022, that all of a sudden opened up the world with a Google style search tool, right? Where you just put in a prompt and it spits something back out to you. They just dumbed it down so that the everyday user could use it. And so again, if you put garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. If you put quality in, quality out. And a lot of the time that I spend with AI is training and programming and giving it data sets. I have built multiple GPTs within ChatGPT alone. That's not even including like Claude and some of the other tools, Midjourney. But I've created data sets that are, I mean, I couldn't even tell you, probably 30 to 50 pages before I even ask it to do a single thing. I've trained it on all my brand strategies, all my marketing planning, all my business planning, all my content style. I've given it dozens of Facebook posts and articles, given it transcripts to podcasts I've been on and YouTube videos that have been successful. I mean, I've given it a decade of information in order before I even asked it for one single thing. Now, the person that just goes, give me a prompt for social media marketing, what do you think they're going to get, right? They're going to get a very basic social media marketing prompt. But if they go, hey, I want you to be a social media marketing expert like Gary Vee, who understands disruptive marketing and how to create controversy. You are an expert in the psychology of contagious marketing by Jonah Berger at the Wharton School of Business. And I want you to take the principles of Donald Miller's book, Story Brand, and incorporate that for me as I continue to try to grow my business on social media. And I talk about underwater basket weaving, whatever that topic is. Now it's got all this base of context on the data set that you use in order to create all this for you. So you're not just guessing and giving it the minimum amount of information possible. And I see a lot of people doing that. It's like, create a social media marketing campaign for my plumbing business. It's like, okay, what kind of plumbing business? Where is it at? What type of customers do you serve? What are the services that you provide the most of? Are you doing water heaters, right? Giving it that data set is the big piece that people need to really jump on and start thinking about.
Yeah, it's interesting that people automatically jump to an overly simplistic solution when they wouldn't do that probably if they're just talking to you, Adrian, because you're going to be then asking them all those questions you just said, like, who's your target market? Where are you, you know, in a specific area? What do you want to target a certain area? Or like, you know, how long have you been in business? And what's the, you know, things that you speak about is probably a good segue to go into is brand storytelling. So, I'm on the same page with that whole approach. That's a big part of sort of what we do as well. And we have like a few different strings to our bow when it comes to things like illustration. So we've got like a different, I'm not sure if it's different thinking about it, but sometimes it sort of incorporates that. And more specifically when it's like a children's book, you know, it's like actual storytelling, but like, so say as a brand storyteller, you being Adrian Boisel, brand storyteller, how have you, like, are there other aspects outside of training, you know, AI models, you know, to go, you know, like you're actually funny. I just had a little metaphor. I'm not sure if this is correct or a good one, but it's like having like a very sophisticated apprentice who's like learning your your skills, and then being able to, but they only know, like anyone, the more specific you are, and then just with time too. It's just like, repetition. So outside of like the things that you're training a model to be like, what other like aspects in terms of then the interaction between you and or your team and using AI, where do those things sort of meet? Like, what's the happy place where they meet with the client? I guess returning to what we were saying before is the client just wants, mm-hmm. yeah, they just want a great result, right? And they yeah. and they want to understand. You go, hey, I'm a brand storyteller, and they're like, I have no idea what that means. And you and then you tell them, and then so do you run through with people? I guess what I'm trying to say is that when you're, you know, saying or pitching or sort of explaining to people about your use of AI and then your like actual human expertise, mm-hmm. how do you talk to people about where those things meet and why that's great? Like outside of the time saving thing, if there's like extra things outside of it being, you know, super efficient, like we were saying before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I started doing branding in 2005 just as a hobby out of high school, and doing logos and just all kinds of branding projects for businesses, nightlife events, bands, all that stuff. So, you know, I'm coming up on 20 years of doing branding, and about 5 or 6 years ago, this is 2017, so quite a few years ago, 2016, 2017, I took some training and mentorship from a gentleman who taught me the value and the importance of building your own frameworks and building your own productized service. So you take your service and you productize it, and you do that by creating a framework around it. And two of things happen. One, I have a story that's associated with how I developed this framework. And two, the framework in itself is unique that nobody else has. Are there similarities between my framework and other people's framework? Absolutely. If you look at Donald Miller's story brand, there are some pieces from that that I've taken and incorporated into mine. If you look at Carl Jung, who's a well-known, you know, modern godfather of modern psychology, I've taken pieces of that. I've taken stuff from Seth Godin's book. I've taken stuff from Jonah Berger's book. I've taken stuff from my own stuff that I've developed just from doing it so many years. I've basically took this all, mixed it all up into my own framework, gave it a name, productized it, and positioned it with its own what I call value stack. And now I have something that nobody else has. And I call it, and it ties back with what I am, like I said in the beginning, a social impact entrepreneur. That is what makes me differentiated from most of the companies that are agency owners, is they go after certain niches and industries and demographics. I go after a psychographic. I'm not looking for a certain industry because I've worked in every industry, name an industry, maybe other than underwater basket weaving. And I guarantee you I've worked in it. And because I'm so agnostic to the different niches, I needed to find something that made me different from every other agency owner. And I had a lot of advice, a lot of mentors tell me, niche down, niche down, niche down. And when it really came down to it, I had a discovery that it wasn't about a demographic. It was the psychographic of, I want people who are not just like-minded, which is important, but like-hearted entrepreneurs, people who are social impact, people who are leading with the napkin like a butler versus a bib. And that's why I call my agency Brand Butler, was we're leading with the napkin, not the bib. We're not trying to take anything from anybody. We're trying to give and support and serve people. And so that is my unique angle. And so I developed the purpose-driven branding blueprint, and your purpose is tied to your story, and your story connects to your niche, and your niche connects back to your identity. And so I have these three pillars that I've created for brand strategy that I do. And then within each pillar, there's three pieces to that. So it's a total of 9-part framework that I've created. And so it goes story, niche, and identity. Inside of your story, you have your why, your what, and your how. Inside of your identity or your niche, you have who do you want to work with, what are their biggest needs, and who do you want to repel? Because most people are not looking at who they want to repel, right? Donald Trump is very good at this. Politicians are very good at repelling the people that are not their ideal person, right? The people, bad PR is still PR, right? There's no such thing as bad publicity. And so being able to repel the people who are not my ideal people, so they go talk and hate and run their mouth about what I do and what I say, whether advocating for AI or being more conservative or being a libertarian or whatever that looks like, the more I speak my truth and my story and what my values are, the more I'm going to repel the people who are not my ideal fit. For the money chasers, those, more power to them. I love you. I support you. But that is not my kind of person. I'm looking for people that want to help other people. And when the more people you help, the more money you should make. Like, money is just a natural consequence. To be pursuing money first and then try to say I'm going to help people is just backwards to me. So I'm very vocal about those types of things as part of my brand strategy and in my story. And then inside of the last pillar, which is your archetype, which is very, very important. Most people don't have an archetype. They have an archetype, but they're not using it or leveraging that amazing tool that's been created, or that method that's been created by Carl Jung. There's 12 different brand archetypes. You know, I'm the rebel and the creator. I'm the creator first. So at the end of the day, what I'm most gifted at is coming up with ideas, being a visionary, seeing a problem and being like, oh, I have an idea. I can come up with more ideas till the cows come home. There's literally no end to the amount of ideas I can come up with. But then being able to take that and execute that obviously is a very important piece of that. And so then I have the rebel personality where everybody's like, we're pro this. I'm like, well, I'm pro that. And I'm usually going the opposite direction. So that rebel personality, I'm challenging the status quo. I'm breaking the rules. I'm doing things differently. I'm trying to be authentic. If you're all these people are in the marketing industry are chasing the money and chasing the success and the fame, I'm chasing the impact and the love and the support and the kindness and the growth, right? And personal growth, and to help people try to become the best version of themselves possible. Because I believe that entrepreneurship is the number one thing and number one path to self-improvement. That is my dream, my vision, my mission. I know from personal experience that being an entrepreneur has brought all of my inadequacies as a person to the surface, and I've had to work on all those things, right? 90% of business problems are personal problems in disguise. And so having those clear archetypes of who I am, what my primary and secondary archetype, really gives clarity to not just for my own sense, but how I'm creating content. So when I post on social media, when I'm posting, making videos, when I show up on podcasts, right? I got my rebel hat on for a reason. I have my campaigner shirt on with the AI in the center for a reason. Very strategic. I am a creator and I am a rebel. I literally have it on my hat. And so I lean into that. You're not going to see the Donald Trumps and the certain leaders of the world who are the rulers ever be like, well, I just love people and I want everybody to be happy and everybody should just be okay. And we should all just give everything away for free, right? That would be way out of character. And that would be against his archetype. He's the ruler and the rebel. Those are his archetypes. So every business and person has an archetype. And so that's the first pillar that I teach with an identity. Then I go into the core values, which is like, what do you stand for? What do you stand against? And then the last thing is your mission statement. What is the mission? And this is something that needs to be very clear, right? I want to buy 1 million computers for at-risk youth that have my educational, not just mine, but other people's educational content on it. And I want to give it away for free. If I can do that, I know that the ripple effect and the amount of lives that will be changed of empowering people in third world countries and different parts of the world, and even here in the United States and Australia, that don't have access to the education, entrepreneurial education, this is a life changer, because entrepreneurship is the number one path, like I've said. So that is my framework that I just do around branding alone. And then I have a whole nother framework that I've built and created called the purpose-driven marketing plan. And that's just a whole nother can of worms I could get into, but it's also a 9-part framework that's broken up into 3 categories the same way. So that's kind of a long-winded response to your question. Is
that's just a good answer.
Frameworks. What's that?
That's a good answer. Like it's not just because it was long and involved, but you're very specific. That sort of really jumps out at me is that, you know, and being specific is one of those things too, like having done networking, you know, for years, meeting a lot of other businesses, like that's the top. There's a few things there as you were saying them, you know, where I was like, oh, that's interesting, because there's a strong correlation, you know, groups that I've been in, groups that I'm in now, when it comes to the type of people that you meet, are very different types of people, but the things, what was the term you were using before?
Demographic and psychographic.
Yeah, psychographic. Yeah, that was like, oh, yes, interesting. Yeah, because that's what I find, like literally all the time, just about every single week, is people are there. They're like very different industries, you know, accountants, other designers, you know, financial planners, people. And for the most part, you know, all of those people, for the most part, as the business owners, are entrepreneurs, and everyone's on a very similar wavelength. And there's a lot of, you know, all those like similar things that crop up that make, you know, that is like one of the reasons why I keep going back all the time. Cause I mean, on one hand, it just makes me feel good. It's like, oh, yeah. I'm not the only one, you know, other people are actually going through on these things, but you know, strategically you learn a lot about other people. And then I guess, you know, similar sort of ideas, the idea of learning through entrepreneurship is also like being around other people, just, you know, even non-specific things, just like the power of osmosis, just sort of absorbing what other people are saying and going, and little, you know, tidbits, which you would otherwise probably not find out if you went and asked somebody, because they're speaking about themselves in an environment which is generally pretty safe, and everyone's like being, and it's really cool. Like it's all, and it's always been like that with a few exceptions. I mean, when groups of people are just like, I just feel awkward. Yeah. But people loosen up. But I wanted to ask you as well, like we're talking, you had like a really good run through in relation to, you know, sort of storytelling and branding, but where does, like for you, where does, say, branding for a company entity meet personal branding? You know, if there's, you know, things where there's a figurehead, yourself, you're the front man. I just happen to be the front man of like our business. I'm out there doing front man type of things, like going, you know, roundhouse, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of people are, so where does, on the level of importance and then what you talk to people about, where personal branding meets company branding, how do those two things interact from your perspective?
Well, that can vary depending on the size of the business, right? If you're starting a brand new business, I don't care how cool your logo and your brand is, you are the brand. You are the face. You are the thing that is drawing people in. You have the story. You have the why. You have, you know, the experience to go out and tell, the case studies, all that. And so the brand has very little credibility in the beginning, right? Apple didn't become Apple just because of the name Apple. It became Apple because of Steve Jobs, right? You can't think of Apple without thinking about Steve Jobs. So they work hand in hand together, and you can't really have one without the other. As the company continues to grow and scale, now all of a sudden you can start to separate yourself from the brand, and you can start to either put other people in the face of the brand, or you create avatars. I mean, look at Geico with their cavemen or their lizards or their pigs. I mean, they have all these different, I don't know if they have a Geico in Australia, but they have different mascots for one company. One company uses 3 to 5 different mascots. They have so many different, they have Flow for Progressive, right? So you create these other characters. Jack in the Box is another one. You have Jack, and he has the big thing on his head. And I mean, he did something very genius where he never had to reveal his true identity of him as a person, of who he was. Right. And if you think of the word anonymous, it's hard to think about that word anonymous now without thinking about that one mask from that one movie, Vendetta, V is for Vendetta, and that mask that everybody wears, right? They don't even think about that mask as V is for Vendetta anymore. That has been rebranded now as the anonymous mask.
Yeah.
Right. And if I show up on a YouTube video today and had a voice changer and put that on and showed up on there, people would think that I was interviewing the anonymous guy, right? And so it's just funny to show, like, as a brand grows and scales, like the personal brand is key, but you can grow it to be bigger than yourself. And so there's just a transition that needs to happen as your brand gets bigger, because you are only scalable to a certain point. And to be honest, if I could go back and do it again, I probably would have created more of a character of a persona than I have a lot longer ago, that would have given me more anonymity. Because like Tim Ferriss talks about this all the time. Like, he can't even go to a restaurant anymore without people being like, oh my gosh, you're Tim Ferriss. Can I have your autograph? And can I ask you a question? And can I pick your brain? Right. And there's something to be said for your privacy. That's why I feel for the celebrities and the influencers that are out there. Like, imagine Mr. Beast. If Mr. Beast goes out anywhere he can't go anywhere without having it being bombarded and being asked to take pictures and any of that. So there is a value into that. And you got to think long-term about that type of situation, is who do you want to be? And so there is going to be a point in my career personally with my personal brand where my personal brand will take the back seat to the Brand Butler brand. I'm building the Jarvis of the marketing world. So I say the future of marketing, I'm building my own Jarvis. And that's why if you go to brandbutler.ai, you'll see as soon as you land on the website, it talks to you. It literally has its own voice, its own dialogue, communicates with you. And it sounds just like Jarvis from Iron Man. And then my Video Marketing Vault brand is the Iron Man character. So I'm building my own character for Video Marketing Vault. And then I have Brand Butler that pairs with it. That is the Jarvis. So they go hand in hand together. They can work individually, but they also work together very well. So I am moving in that direction so that I can, as I start putting out books and build, continue to build my personal brand, it's not going to be associated with Brand Butler and Video Marketing solely. Like I can get a sponsorship deal with a company called Vuit, which is a real situation. And now I can be the spokesperson for Vuit. Or if Elon Musk decides that he needs a new CEO for X and whoever that gal that he has isn't working out, I have enough name and reputation and enough brand authority from a marketing perspective where I could come in and lead X, right? And I'm just using that as an example. But like your personal brand gives you the ability to expand just beyond your own business. So I'm building the two up together, but they can also work individually.
Yeah. And I guess in a way that was a little bit of a leading question, because like I always feel like you are probably come across this too, is that when you were referencing, you know, people in the early days of business, especially like there's, you know, some people who are very reticent to, you know, to be that guy or that girl who is like the front guy. I mean, I remember like literally when we started our business and my natural inclination is probably to be, you know, at home designing, mucking around with like 3D models, doing artwork, whatever, you know, like a lot of creatives. But I really love people too, and I love talking. And when I first started, I remember specifically, remember the day when I first went to my first networking group and my wife said, you have to go and do networking. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that. That sounds, you know, I was like, I was really negative towards it. It's really funny thinking back, because then of course, and the funny correlation was we were doing taekwondo at the time, and we used to going into like a club, you know, club environment, and there's people there and you're like bow and you go in, and it's very warm and you're helping each other out, in short. Mm-hmm. And I went to this networking group, went to BNI for the first time, you know, 15 years ago, whatever it is now, and walked in the room thinking, feeling like it was going to be a pyramid scheme or something, like something really suspect. And yeah. I had a wonderful time and it was amazing. And I got my first, and I got a referral that day. And there was a Sparky electrician who was like, hey, can I do my website? And I was like, this is pretty good. And everyone there was really friendly, and they were just normal people. And they were all. And so I jumped, I think literally in that day, mentally, from I'm fighting against, even though I didn't realize it at the time, fighting against being the front guy to having to be the front guy. But then through the realization that everyone else is doing that and they're completely cool with that. And that you can't sort of escape it and to embrace it. And I guess that, and it's interesting for me that then you as a part of what you're doing with Brand Butler, you know, I'm sort of making a few assumptions here, is, you know, trying to be able to distill through good prompts and good, you know, teaching of an AI system to distill like the essence without losing it, because you're still there, you know, too. Right. There's like Adrian hasn't disappeared, and there's like fake Adrian is like, hello, I'm fake Adrian. Everyone's like, well, I don't want to deal with fake Adrian. I want to deal with real Adrian. Plus, he's got some cool tools that make everything that, you know, real Adrian and his team do well, they make it better. But people have to see it in action, right?
That's right. You gotta show the case studies, the real results, the journey that you go on. Yep.
Yeah, the real story. It's like nobody, I know if I'm able to talk with somebody in person or on Zoom and actually talk to them about their project, you know, you create a connection. So I guess as a little bit of a segue to that idea of connection, what do you find about these tools are good at assisting or sort of enhancing connections with people, either in the marketing sort of sense or even like the you as an agency and client interaction? Is there anything that sort of in enhances that?
Yeah, I've found a lot of enhancement. So a good example of that would be social media marketing, right? Top of mind awareness, branding, relationship building. You have your business pages, which get about 1% exposure to the actual people that are following those pages. And then you have your Facebook personal profile, which is about, you know, 10%, but that's 10 times the amount of effectiveness. And some people get a lot more than that. My wife has, you know, about 1,000 people on her Facebook, or probably a little bit less than that, maybe even half that, but she probably gets a 25, 30% engagement on her stuff, right? And so with social media content, at one point, because I have so much to say, I'm very high on the DISC test, the driver, influencer, or inspire, or whatever, steady and compliant. If you've done the DISC test, I'm a 93 on the I. So I overwhelm people with the amount of information that I have. That's why podcasts and radio shows and YouTube is perfect for me. This is my calling. This is where I'm supposed to be, is doing this kind of stuff, because I could just talk. I mean, you have a hard time shutting me up. That's the real issue, is get me started and then have fun start shutting me up. But when I write posts, my posts can take me, I mean, one Facebook post could take me 2 hours to write, you know, a few hundred words, because I'm such a creative, and I'm such a perfectionist as the creator, that it's got to be right. And what AI has allowed me to do is, I would have only been able to get maybe one post like that out a week because of how busy I am and how many consultations and clients and podcasts and TV shows and interviews and courses and YouTube videos I'm making and client work and even some designs that I'm doing. Like, I'm just spread so thin, working on multiple books. I got 4 books written. So like juggling all these balls, I don't have 2 hours to sit down and write one post, right? But now, because of AI, I can give my initial thoughts and ideas and concepts. You look at my Facebook page and you'll see this. The last 3 to 4 posts that I've done, I've been able to master writing these posts and enhance my thoughts that I'm trying to get out. And I can do it in 30 minutes versus 2 hours. And so now in 2 hours, I can get 4 posts out, right? Versus just the one. And they're even better. They're more detailed. They're more engaging. They're more my personality, because I've trained it so well. Not only have I trained it on my personality by seeing all the blog articles that I've written, the books that I've written, the videos that I've recorded, like it knows my personality probably even better than I do, which is a little freaky, but I've given it so much information about me. Now, when I go to write a post, it sounds like me, and I've enhanced that on top of it with more controversy, because controversy is currency, and I've been able to add the controversy side to my posts. So now my posts go viral and people are sharing them. I wrote a whole post about web design and how people think about web design incorrectly, where they're like, you know, I don't want to pay $10,000 or $15,000 for a website. I'm like, cool. Well, instead, I could just teach you. So if I teach you, I can teach you for $2,000. I'll teach you how to do this. And then you're going to need to get a specialized computer to do all the graphics. Then you're going to need to get a copywriter. Then you're going to need to get a server to set up on your own. Then you're going to need to download all these plugins and pay for these yourself. Then you're going to need to know how to optimize the website for speed and do all these configurations. Then you're going to need to know, you know, and I'll even rent you my computer. So that's going to be another, you know, week. I'll rent it to you for $1,000. And so I broke this whole post down, and now they see, like, man, it's going to cost me $7,000 to do this myself, or I could just have him do this for $15 and it's going to be done right. And so I was able to create that post, and that post literally went so viral that other marketers were taking it and using it for their own marketing and getting hundreds of comments and likes on their posts and not even tagging me in it until I called them out, a couple of them out.
Rep bags.
And turned out that they were actually doing this to other people, and they had been exposed as frauds and scammers and things like that. Yeah. And so it just goes to show, like, AI has enhanced my abilities, my abilities are already great. I already know my stuff. I'm a great marketer. I put myself up against the Russell Brunsons and the Chet Holmes of the world, right? I'm top of my game. And so if I put good stuff into AI, it's only going to create that much better stuff. And so that's where I'm at now, is the content I'm creating, the videos I'm creating, the long form posts, the books. I challenge anybody to come up with something better, because I don't just have the knowledge, I have the experience of almost 20 years of doing this in the trenches, and all this data that I've been able to import. I mean, hundreds of consultations I've imported transcripts of into my Brand Butler tool.
Yeah, it's a really important point. It just returns to what we were saying before about input output, is that, you know, experience, like, you can't buy experience. You can't, you know, that's a really, so at the heart of it, you know, I would, and this is probably saying this even for myself too, because the idea of, you know, this sort of fear fueled really by, I guess, Hollywood, you know, about AI, you know, and is, you know, I get it, of course, like, everyone's been trained, so to speak, you know, because we have been trained just like an AI model, you know, repeatedly, because that's all it is. It's just repetition, something, someone, something, you know, learning data, because that's all. I mean, it sounds very clinical, but your personality, and I mean, yeah, people listening would be like, no, we're people. Yeah, we are people, of course, but we're also, it's still just me saying words and me, you know, having a certain intonation, or me having, you know, whatever, or me being like rude and coarse, or like soft and kind, is, you know, ends up being data. You know, so if you're taking that, I mean, how different is it to, say, an actor, you know, taking data from, you know, of me putting on, you know, the voice before? I mean, that's not me, is it? Yeah, that's not me. Yeah, you know, but I'm choosing to do it, and I'm lucky enough to have like a little bit of a sore throat, so I get to put on like the cool deep voice, you know. That's that's not me, and that's what actors do all the time. They take data. They take information and they refashion it in a hugely creative way. Them being people, and they understand, they get into the data, you know, about it, I guess. And they
look at Hugh Jackman. I mean, you know, a fellow Aussie, right? Hugh Jackman has a thick Australian accent, but every time he's in a movie, he never has it, except for that one with Nicole Kidman or whoever that was that he was in Australia. It was like the one movie he didn't have to pretend to have an English American accent, right? And the cool thing about the movie in the Hollywood industry that I see happening with AI, I'm actually excited about this, because I'm a huge movie guy, always have been, always will be. I'm a movie buff. I mean, old movies all the way up to the most recent, like Deadpool and Wolverine. That was hilarious. But what's going to happen here over the next 5 years because of AI is you're going to be able to choose your outcome, right? When movies go on to like on demand, pay per view, you know, like watch at home type movies, you're going to be able to pick the different endings and the different courses that these actors are going on.
Where gaming meets movies. Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's happening. Like, that is going to happen, where you're going to be able to have a completely unique outcome, almost like you have free will within the movies to see the story end in a specific way. And it might give you 2 to 3 different pathways and outcomes. And that's only going to be able to be possible with AI. And so these actors are going to be the tool that AI uses to be the talent, be the character, and who knows, maybe they might have to record parts of this, but AI may be able to just take their resemblance, their voice, their inflections, their body language, and recreate that, so they don't have to do all these extra parts where now all of a sudden an actor is playing in a role. Let's just say it's Lion King 5 or whatever it is. They're playing in a role, you know, the live action, and now they only have to spend 30 minutes or an hour or a day recording, and now there's 20 different outcomes of that, and they still get paid the same amount of money, but now these can tail off into 5 different outcomes, and they make, so that's going to be really neat. I'm interested to see how that's all going to happen.
And where those things meet, where people then don't go, okay, my industry is now screwed, you know, because you're going to have that, and you have that now too. I mean, I know a bunch of you know, voice actors, you know, friends who do work for us, and I mean, Hugh Jackman, I know he does a lot of those guys and girls, like they do a lot of voice acting, and they're doing, and interestingly, once again, we can draw sort of comparisons and, you know, things that run along side by side with AI that are sort of similar but have already been happening and well established, like people doing voiceover acting for animated films, or that's like right. for films like Avatar, which bring together the idea, which is interesting because they haven't, whilst they're able to, like, it's very sophisticated and, you know, arguably, you know, at the top of realism in terms of you not looking at it from the perspective of like a synthetic, you know, sort yeah. of character, going, wow, that's kind of amazing. Like, you know, that, but they still haven't, you probably would have seen on all across YouTube the different versions of movie trailers that they do in another style. Have you seen them?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like the ones, there's a whole series, because I went, I've been reading all the Dune books, and I read all the first, I've been listening to them because yeah. of time. So I've just been like, yeah. I've been able to get through a huge amount of stuff. Listen to all the first six Dune books. And I'm now onto the prequels, which is, and then when I was doing that, I went onto YouTube and I just searched for something relating to Dune, and these things popped up, which were, I think it was like a 50s or 60s version of like the trailer for Dune. And I mean, some of them were a bit wonky. It was like an yeah. AI. Jenna was a bit like, well, that's a bit crazy looking, like someone's face did something weird. But I get it. Like that's okay, you know, because it's just a funny trailer. But it was really good. Like it had some great, you know, model looking like monsters doing things like the sandworms and things that obviously had very good input in terms of the data. But as an interesting point, which has sort of really stuck in my mind. Have you read the Dune books?
Or I haven't read the Dune books. I've watched both of the Dune movies, which I thought were really, really good. They're a little slow, but they're phenomenal. What I'm excited about is in a movie like Dune, where it becomes an immersive back and forth experience in a movie, where it's not just like, do you want this outcome or do you want this outcome? And you like select it, but like you are in the movie with a headset, augmented reality, you know, whatever that is, you know, the headsets like the Oculus, and you're in the movie and you get to be an immersive part of the story, where it's like you go this direction and the character in the movie follows you, and all of a sudden now you go on in this tangent and different direction in the movie, and it becomes not just a movie
film, but games,
an immersive experience where there's going to be a cross between films. I mean, video games have gotten so realistic now and so graphics have gotten so good. I mean, we're not far away from that gap. I mean, that gap just keeps getting closer and closer, where now video games and movies might just merge into one.
Yeah, I remember actually I know a few different people say in the art field and like art installation, and like when, you know, do you remember Peter Greenaway, the filmmaker who made The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, more sort of like, you know, he's I guess you would say, without a better way to explain, a more sort of artistic filmmaker, but he did this, he had a crack about, and actually saw it at the Queensland Art Gallery, years ago, and he did this thing, it was under a pseudonym, under someone else, but it was actually Peter Greenaway, but he wanted to pursue this idea, and this was about 10 or 12 years ago, actually probably a little bit more, of that very idea in the lo-fi, when like things were kind of called multimedia, you know, multimedia was like a thing, and he was trying to pursue this idea of films that he was making, but them going down alternate paths. But then he, of course, had the alternate paths pre-established, predetermined, which I would imagine still, even with AI, it's like the stories you read. We've got a couple of novels that we read for fun on like road trips where they have like alternate endings, and you do X and you jump Y. And that was really fun. And I feel that for that to be successful, you still have to have some framework we're talking about. Otherwise it would just be like, I don't know, like is that still a good story? It's probably
that'll
not.
That'll be driven by our Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Is what is it that we're trying to get out of this movie? Is it, you know, a positive outcome? Is it a negative outcome? Is it a, you know, what are the needs that we're trying to fulfill? Is it inclusion? Is it, you know, positivity and impact? It's just going to be depending on, you know, they'll probably have a method that they will develop, just like I've developed,
yeah,
where it'll be determined by 3 to 5 different, you know, maybe 6 pillars of what is the need and the objective that you have when you're going into a movie like Doom. Do you want to be included in the storyline so that,
yeah,
you know, you are right, one of the heroes, or become, you're the villain, or you want to see the villain win, or, you know what I mean? They'll all have, you know, a lot of the stories are all the same framework. Every movie, 80, 90% have all the same frameworks to it, you know, from beginning, middle, and end. And the boy meets girl falls in love, they break up, they get back together, you know what I mean? Seeing like the Notebook story, right? And so a lot of movies have the same story arc, but the dynamics and the details, the context changes within the story, but the outcome usually ends up pretty much the same, right? The happy ending.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you see that established in most video games at the start too. You go into a Diablo or whatever, or like Rome Total War, like you want to be the Romans. You want to be, yep, like you, things that you resonate with for whatever reason. Like we're playing at home.
Yeah.
My son and I right now, and I've always, with World War II stuff, the Germans just always have great uniforms and great gear. And I was like,
yeah,
you know, I don't love the Nazis. Of course I don't. But like, nobody, you know, but the Germans have cool stuff. So I was like insistent when we're playing the board game Axis and Allies. I'm like, I really want to play the Germans. And so yeah, I played the Germans, you know, for all the very base, you know, superficial, yeah, fun, non-specific, yeah, reasons. But like, you still have a starting
great
point.
Great branding.
That's, yeah, it all, yeah, yeah.
I mean, think about all the greatest. So I'm in the middle of writing a book. It's my 5th book. I haven't come up with a title for it yet, but it's about how America is the most powerful brand on the planet. It's not Coca-Cola. It's not Nike. It's not even Michael Jackson. That America is the greatest brand ever created, and it's because of the branding, the Statue of Liberty, the symbols of the military, the way our currency is designed, and the statements that are made, and the Pledge of Allegiance, and the American flag. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and the case studies that I'm building around this to show how impactful America as a brand, right? Just like Donald Trump. Donald Trump is where he's at today because of his Trump brand, right? And that is why he's gotten to where he is. This, the Apprentice and all the Trump Towers and Trump this and Trump that. And so he has, yeah, such a great brand with AI. AI is going to make brand more important than ever. And that's why you see so many people that were solar guys and Forex guys and crypto guys and NFT guys now becoming personal branding experts, right? Because they see the writing on the wall that personal branding and branding is becoming, brand is everything. Logan Paul, Mr. Beast, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, you know, those personal brands can blow up and grow and generate, right? It's the attention. Attention creates that currency and brings the money in, right? And that's what a lot of people are after, or brings the impact, you know, depending on who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. So we got I made a mistake, and I will apologize in advance now, Adrian. I meant to say before we started the podcast, and people can hear it so they understand that I'm an honest and upright citizen, and I'm telling him now, not just going to throw it on him, that I usually ask at the start so you're well prepared to have some sort of quote to say near the end of the podcast. So, but I'm assuming you probably have a few up your sleeve that you might be able to, being a wily and out there entrepreneur, you probably have a number you could just like whip out of your side pocket right now anyway, yeah, right?
Yeah, I have a few, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll actually do that. We'll actually do that now. So if you need to take a moment just to meditate and think about it, please do so. But if not, yeah, just pull it out.
No, I mean, my quote, and how long is this? Is this like a quick quote, or is this a longer?
Whatever you like.
I don't want to go into like a 10-minute monologue, but But my purpose on this earth is to help at-risk youth and restore broken families. I've gone through a lot of ups and downs in my life, a lot of traumas, a lot of challenges, and I didn't realize that I had to experience what it was like to have my own broken family, coming out of a broken family, and then having my own broken family and having to restore that. And a lot of the things that I've learned, when in those dark seasons of life, I've been able to invest and work hard so that when I come out of those, I'm proud of myself. And so if you're going through a hard time in your life and you want to come out of that and have an even better life after, then those times when you're going through the darkness, you're going through the valley, you're going through the hard times and you're experiencing that suffering, that's the time to double down, lean in, and work harder to become the best version of yourself that you possibly can, so that the springboard effect that happens, the next hill after the valley, right, the next peak that you have, is way bigger than anything else that you've experienced in your life. And the way that you do that is by stacking skills. I've been stacking skills my entire career and even before that, from being a kid, washing cars, raking leaves, learning how to develop a strong work ethic, to becoming a designer, practicing drawing my whole life, and then leveraging that into video, turning video into SEO, SEO into websites, websites into advertising, advertising into lead generation into running an agency into marketing strategy, brand strategy, developing my own frameworks, which led me into skill stacking on the public speaking side of things, and then YouTube and learning the YouTube algorithm, and then social media marketing. I've been stacking skills my whole entire career. And if you want to make more money, which a lot of people want to make more money, they don't want to live in poverty or even on the poverty line, and you want to elevate your income and change the life for yourself, your family, and the people that are around you, you have to start stacking skills. Pick up a book, download an audiobook, and start going through these things one day at a time, right? 1% per day is all that's required. If you do that consistently over a year, 2 years, 3 years, or 5 years, you're going to see over that time horizon how much 1% per day makes a difference in your life. And I'm telling you right now, entrepreneurship is the greatest path to self-improvement you could possibly walk down. A lot of people are working in this 9-to-5 world thinking that their job is going to provide them with security. And as many of you guys have seen through these downturns and economic recessions from 08 to what's happening now, there's no real sense of security. The box that they think is there is not actually there. It's just a figment of their imagination. The only security that you have is stacking skills enough so that you're never unemployed and you're never without money. And the first way that I did that for myself was learning how to sell, which is not taking anything from anybody. It's actually giving. It's serving people, finding out what the problems are that they're facing and going in and serving them. So if you don't have a sales understanding or a really good fundamental around that, there's a book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Hart Ecker. That should be the first book that you wrap your mind around and read. Not once, not twice, but probably 3 times, because you're going to find something new every single time you read it. So that all being said, that's just my initial tips for you guys. If you're in a place where you're like, I really need to get my income to the place where I really want, that is the first place you start. Start by looking at the skills that you have and look at what those are worth, right? Consulting makes me $1,000 an hour. When I was doing graphic design, I made $10, $20, $30 an hour, right? And so when I'm doing online webinars and I do a 90-minute webinar and I can make $10, $20, $30,000, $50,000 on a webinar, how much is that per hour? And so there's different skills that pay different bills. And as you continue to scale, you're going to reach different lids, and you have to learn how to get past the law of the lid on each one of those steps. So those all come with their own challenges, as they say, new level, new devil. And that's what I got for you guys today. So if you need anything else, feel free to reach out, feel free to ask, and I'm always here to support you guys.
Very good. Nicely done, nicely executed. Yeah, very true, very true. And I think there's, you know, a key message there for me that has always been, you know, increasingly important over the years, is the what they say in BNI, and I think it's true, which is you know, give is gain. The idea that I like to give, right. And for a lot of people, you know, anyone listening who is like, well, you know, that's a bit, you know, whatever, but I think it's true. And it's not necessarily like having the faith in something or other people, or then in yourself to do. And some people, that's in the religious you know, sense. For me, it's like, you know, it's linked to other things like that, but also the idea that people faith in yourself and in things, and then other people not knowing necessarily 100% the outcome is a very hard concept for people to get their head around.
That's right.
I find it's very challenging, and I still do find it sometimes challenging, especially when things are like, oh, you know, you want this to happen, but I do always find without fail, that when you stick at it, and like you were saying, especially incremental little bits, that's for my wife and I speak about this, you know, still that implementing that in all sorts of things, you know, sport, life, talking to people, doing jobs, doing tasks, little bits consistently, like doing things incrementally, consistently, and consistently is the key, I think. That's, you know, right. Doing consistency is the key, because doing little bits is obviously useless, because then you start it and that's, you know, that flows through to everything. And
well, that's why your faith is so important, right? Because your faith is what your purpose is going to come from, right? That comes from up above, or however you want to look at it. And that when you understand what your purpose is, and that's why that's the number one step. What's your why, right? Why are you here? Why are you doing what you do on a business level, on a personal level? When you're clear about your purpose, then you can go out and share that purpose. And once you share that purpose, you can start to monetize that purpose, right? So my purpose is helping at-risk youth and restoring broken families, right? That's my ministry. That's my purpose. That's why God put me here. Everything that I do, I run through that filter. Business partnerships, clients, relationships. If it's not funding and fueling and moving me in the direction of my God-given purpose and not moving me closer to that, I say no, because good is the enemy of great. And there are so many people out there that are wandering without their purpose. So if that's you and you're like, well, I don't even know what my purpose is. Well, you need to go discover that. And that's your number one task before you stack another skill or worry about reading another book. And maybe you can find that answer in a book, but spend time, because the answer is within you, right? Most people are trying to go into the outside world to figure out what their purpose is. That purpose is within you. And so your job is to go and do whatever it's going to take to find out what that is. Prayer, meditation, quiet time, yoga, mindfulness, worship, music. You're going to find that. And a lot of you know what that is, and it's right underneath your nose, and you're just missing it. And I know what that's like. I know that feeling, because they say that the two best days in your life are the day that you're born and the day you find out why. If you don't know why you were put here, this is your number one goal that you should be focused on.
Yeah. And then sometimes, unfortunately, it's also hardship too, or like a combination of, you know, you realize, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's too late, but like that's life too, right? I mean, that's you realize having realizations is, you know, it's something that you can't always explain in words to other people, but people get it. And I find that when, you know, that term why, finding your why. And I mean, I always tend to steer away from when some things start to become bandied around as a term that has no meaning. And that's one of the things that I find, you know, sometimes not a lot, because a lot of people that I know, they actually like really, they totally know their why. They found it. And you know it because it exudes, it comes out. Like, it's very obvious to me that when you're talking about things, you're very, very passionate. People can tell, like you can just tell, and you don't have to be a genius, don't have to be an empath, you know, to know it. You know it, and you see it, and you feel, especially in a room, you get it. It's really obvious, and that is, you know, that's at the heart. I think, you know, it all boils down for me anyway. Like, you know, I feel always super privileged to be able to talk to people on the podcast, because I get to have conversations that I almost like otherwise never have. Well, in this way, where you're talking about very specific things, and there's always a lot of passion. That's the common thread. Now up to like episode, I think you're episode 65 or something, Adrian. And nice. I find now only in retrospect, you know, of having like a whole lot of people I've talked to, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. The common thread is what comes through with the vast majority of people is their passion about stuff. Their enthusiasm and passion about it. And then my natural curiosity to go, that's not me. I don't do that, but that's really cool. I'm always surprised. I'm always like, I go into things like a lot of people do, having an assumption and go, oh, I'm probably going to know about this and you know that. Not overly thinking it. But then I actually try to do that less because I know it's probably invariably just not going to be like that. I'm going to be, wow, I learned something new, like yet again. From like a selfish perspective about me getting stuff out of the podcast, that's what I get out of it because I get to learn and, you know, it's been really great to chat, Adrian, and for outside of like your last really great set of things you share with everyone, what's the best way for people to then learn more about you and Brand Butler? Where do they go? We'll have it in the links too, in the description, but
yeah, check me out on YouTube. YouTube is where I put my whole heart and soul into, because I got, when I first started my journey about a month in, I made a YouTube video and I had an 11-year-old boy. He's probably 16, 17 now, or about probably 16 now. And he said, if I'm ever successful in life, it's going to be because of your videos. And that, now saying that, it gets me choked up. And every time I create a new YouTube video, I think of him. And I create for just that one person. I don't need to create for the whole world. And when you deliver from that place of just wanting to serve that one person, I don't care if he's even watching anymore or not, because I know there's another 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old. And I've had other people that have joined my communities from that have said the same thing as, I woke up every day. I got a guy from Nigeria. I wake up every day and I just pray that Adrian uploads another video. And just to hear the impact that makes on people, I share everything I could possibly ever learn and that I have learned so far on my YouTube channel. Every time I learn something new, I jot it down as a YouTube video idea, and eventually I make that video and I take suggestions from other people. So if you want to learn the stuff that I've learned and learn almost everything that I've learned through just the actual experiences that I've had, you can do that through my YouTube channel. Just look up my name, Adrian Boysell. If you're interested in developing a purpose-driven branding blueprint or a purpose-driven marketing plan, and you want to discover what your purpose is, my tools are designed to help you do that. It's just like a job form. You just answer 22 questions on the marketing or the branding blueprint. And then there's like 30 questions on the marketing plan. And it gives you these beautiful blueprints that we've created that will give you that clarity, that give you that direction that you can then go integrate and execute on for your brand, for your business, or even just your personal brand. And so those are the two things, brandbutler.ai or my YouTube channel. And then I also have a website, adrianboysell.com. You can learn a little bit more about me there. I have some videos there, kind of my background and story there. So yeah, that's the best way to get a hold of me and touch bases if you want to learn more.
Content is king, right?
What's that? Content is king. That's right.
Content is king. Actually, do you know, just on a parting note, I don't know that the answer to this, so I'm not asking because I know. I'm asking just in case you know. Do you know who actually said that quote? Because I'm always using it because I think it's a good one. It's either something that wasn't made up by an actual person and it just emerged. Or
I mean, if I were to take an educated guess, it's probably someone like Gary Vee or, you know, the Grant Cardones or somebody that's very, very famous that is known for content. I feel like
it's been around for longer than that, but probably. maybe not, because I've been using it for forever, and I've always, and it's always that joke. It's like, there's this quote, content is king, and you're searching for it right now, aren't you?
I am. I'm looking. I'm not just searching for it. I'm searching for it on AI. So watch this. Let's see what ChatGPT says.
What does it say?
So who came up with the phrase content is king? Oh my gosh. The phrase content is king is widely attributed to Bill Gates. He popularized this concept, essay he wrote in 1996 titled Content is King. In this essay, Gates predicted that the content creation on the internet would be the driving force behind business success in the digital age. The phrase has since become a foundational concept in digital marketing, emphasizing the importance of high-quality content and attracting and retaining.
I would never have expected that. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Bill.
I guess technically OpenAI and ChatGPT is a Microsoft product, so in a way.
Oh, well, there you go. Hey, thanks. I learned something else new. Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. And thank you, ChatGPT.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it was awesome to chat. Really super interesting. Any parting notes?
No, I just want to encourage you. I don't come from a great background, great upbringing. As I said in the very beginning of this, I had a really rough childhood. Didn't even get to finish high school. And I've built a seven-figure agency. I've built multiple seven-figure businesses. Started my first business at 19 years old and had a brick and mortar store. And I've been able to stack my way to where I am today, where I'm almost to the place where I'm financially retired. I don't need to worry about money ever again. And I'm only 37 years old. And so anybody is capable of doing this. Your past, your history, the things you've done wrong in your life do not disqualify you from being able to live the most extraordinary life, a life beyond what you even realize is possible. If I was talking to my 8-year-old self and I told him what I did today and he was listening to this podcast, he wouldn't even believe it. And so you are capable of so much more than you think. You can do so much more, but those limiting beliefs and the things that you speak over yourself are very powerful. So start paying attention to the things that you say about yourself and to yourself, and you'll see in a very short period of time with consistency and that 1% investment into yourself every day, your life will look completely different in 5, 10, 15 years.
100% agree. Great parting note. Thanks again, Adrian. And thanks again, everyone, for listening as always. And say goodbye to everyone, Adrian.
Keep looking up.
See you, everyone. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.